Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello, Weirdsville. Thank you for tuning in once again to the What's Your Weird Story. I should say thank you for downloading or putting us in your automatic feed on your favorite podcast platform. Either way, you're listening right now, and we thank you. And who's that we? We, part of it is the person who's not speaking, Mr. Barry Johnston.
Hello.
And he spoke. And now the other part is me, Adam Beebe, and we are your co-hosts, as you know, or have just found out if this is your first episode, because, hey, this is a great first episode to join in on. And for everybody else who's been listening, this has just been another great episode. And this is also a unique and first for us here on the What's Your Weird Story as far as subject matter goes.
I'm super excited about this, and I had no idea what we were getting ourselves into. You know, because I think you told me, hey, I've got this guy who has a story about the Lake Champlain monster, but that's all that you really said about it, which is good because, you know, that way that's kind of how we do things where you'll know something and the other person won't. Well, I didn't realize just how knowledgeable Mr. Martis is, Mr. Scott Martis. Mm-hmm. Let me get the terminology correct here. He's a cryptozoologist. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, he is a legit cryptozoologist, which you will hear me fumble and stumble to find the accurate term early in the interview. But yeah, he is a researcher. He had an experience, and you know, as he'll describe, he had an experience in the mid-90s where he witnessed CHAMP, and it just, you know, it just sparked this lifelong. I mean, he was into it already as far as, you know, in the investigation, but he's been researching, investigating various sea monsters and lake monsters for the past, you know, 20 plus years. And he's got a book, and he's got he's on documentaries, and you know, and we are very fortunate and very lucky to have such an esteemed guest who is, you know, out there in the field doing research. You know, this is, you know, it's legit scientific research for unknown species, and it's really cool. And we, you know, we're just thrilled just waiting for, you know, and then just even talking to him is just fantastic.
Yeah,
it's great.
The fact that he wanted to be on our lonely little podcast here is incredible. I mean, he had a lot to say, and he was chomping at the bit. He really wanted to get on and do it justice. And his insight, his knowledge about the subject is incredible. Mm-hmm. He's been studying this thing for over 27 years. Mm-hmm. Like he was saying, he was a big Loch Ness monster enthusiast when he was younger and really wanted to study something like that. But, you know, in his words, he didn't feel like he could move to Scotland. And this was sort of the next best thing. And so that's what he spent his time doing. Yeah. And it was really great to talk to him.
Yeah.
And get his angle on things.
Yeah, so let's quit dancing about and let's get to it. Scott, we're so excited to talk to you today, to hear your story and to hear about what you've been doing in the past since the story happened. So what's your weird story?
All right. This was in Burlington, Vermont, in July of 1994, almost 25 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the lake, Lake Champlain,
mm-hmm.
watching for the so-called monster, the Lake Champlain monster, which they call CHAMP, with binoculars. And I had been going to the same place called Battery Park, which is a public park that sits up on a bluff overlooking one of the deepest parts of Lake Champlain. And I had these really powerful binoculars that I was watching the lake with. I had just moved there 3 months previously. So it was about 5 o'clock in the afternoon. I think the date was July the 2nd. And I was looking out probably about 1,000 yards away in the area of some buoys. And I saw this big mound-like hump come up out of the water. A garbage bag color. Sort of a greeny black.
Okay.
This is exciting.
Mound-like hump. And in the middle of the hump was a smaller object on top, which was obviously part of the animal.
Mm-hmm. What
this thing was. And then it turned to the right and started swimming to the right. And this smaller object, which I think was probably a flipper or some kind of appendage,
mm-hmm.
was on the right end of the swimming mound. And it swam for a little bit with a kind of a rocking up and down motion, and then stopped, and then just sank like a rock. And this all took place in like the period of like, I don't know, 10, 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was gone. But I did see this through binoculars. Wow. And based on boats that were going by in the same area, I looked at the boats and I went down to a marina, which is about 2 blocks away, looking for the same type of boats that were about the same size as this object. And based on the boats that I found at the marina, I estimated that this pump, big mound, was probably about 15 feet long.
Damn.
Wow.
So the best analogy that I could compare it to was a leatherback sea turtle.
Okay.
Seen any pictures of those?
Yes.
You can imagine a leatherback sea turtle without the spots on it. It's a garbage bag, greeny black color.
Uh huh.
That's what it looked like, was a giant leatherback sea turtle.
Wow.
And I didn't have a camera at the time. I wish I had. Would have took a photograph, but that's what I saw.
Interesting.
And in the 25 years that I have looked for this creature, that's the only time that I believe I've seen it.
How many years did you say?
Well, this would have been July 1994.
How long so previous to that?
5 years ago.
25 years ago. How long had you been looking for it prior to that?
Well, my first trip to Lake Champlain was in November 1992.
Okay.
Okay.
So if you count that, that's almost 27 years.
Right. Wow. Wow.
But I moved to Burlington, Vermont, in April of 1994, 3 months before I had my sighting.
Okay.
I lived there for 18 years. Then I married my wife and moved to Florida, but I still go back to Lake Champlain in Vermont every summer for like a month to keep looking for the monster.
Wow.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Do you know what the most recent sighting has been?
The most recent good one that I'm aware of was in September of 2015. Two women were out on the lake on jet skis.
Mm-hmm.
And saw this back and what appeared to be a long neck come up out of the water.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And they saw it from the jet skis. So that's 4 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just about, yeah.
Now, did you move there specifically to research and look for the monster? Okay.
Absolutely. I mean, I've been in Loch Ness Monster Night since I was a kid.
Yeah, okay. Me too.
And that's what I was going to ask, yeah.
I couldn't realistically pick up and move to Scotland. Right. But moving to Vermont was doable, so that's what I did. I mean, the Lake Champlain Monster has a long history of sightings going back to the 1870s.
Yeah.
It's been before the Loch Ness Monster. And there's several pieces of photographic and video evidence that's very impressive from Lake Champlain. So,
sure.
I figure that's the next best thing I could do.
For sure.
To move into Scotland. So.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Still, and you lucked out.
Still in the game, you know. Yeah. And since my sighting, two pieces of evidence, intriguing pieces of evidence that have come up during my searches. In 2016, I was part of a Japanese documentary. The Japanese Asahi Broadcasting came over and rented boats, and we had underwater cameras. And I think it was November of 2016, we got video of something coming up trying to take a bait that looked like some sort of appendage, either a flipper or possibly a tail wag thing. Piece of bait you see in the video is the size of my hand. So whatever this piece of an animal was at least 2 feet long.
Wow.
It could have been the tail of a really big eel. Now, some people think these monsters are nothing but giant eels.
Yeah.
Then again, it could have been the flipper of a more advanced animal, something along the lines of maybe a plesiosaur or a prehistoric whale, or, you know, any of these hypothetical creatures that they put forward to identify what these creatures could be. But it's ambiguous. But it is an interesting piece of video.
How large of a body of water is that? Is that, do you know?
120 miles long with a maximum depth of 400 feet.
Wow.
So there's a big middle chunk of the lake that's regularly between 250, 300 feet deep. So there's a lot of water there.
That's a lot of water.
That's a lot. Yeah, that's a lot of water. How? Yeah, and it's a lot of, I mean, that seems to me you could definitely have one or two or more, you know, large creatures easily there.
5 times longer than Loch Ness, but it's deep.
Half as deep, yeah.
Yeah, but it's, you know, Loch Ness goes down to 750 feet deep. I mean, it's just the depth at Loch Ness is just unreal.
I watched a thing on Loch Ness not too long ago where they tried to explain it as a prehistoric shark that lived in the water. I don't know if you ever heard that, but they...
The Greenland shark.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm familiar with it.
Okay.
I didn't. It's a large shark that lives in the Arctic regions.
Right.
But it occasionally swims up rivers.
Okay.
Mm. Yeah, I'm familiar with this.
And they live for hundreds of years.
400 years, I think, they found out.
Yeah.
The estimated age of one of them, yeah.
That's intense. Yeah, the thing I was looking at said the one that is the most famous sighting of one of those, they... I was looking up on Snopes actually before we called because I wanted to kind of look and see what age we're looking at. And they, when they first came out, they said that it was 500 years old, but then they backed off of that a little bit and said that it's at least 272 years old.
Well, that's still fantastic, right? Yeah, there.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's a fairly recent discovery, I believe. I think I want to say that there was or something like that. Well, it came out last year.
Yeah, it was 2016 was okay.
Yeah,
So what are your thoughts on that as far as how it pertains to Lake Champlain?
you have to understand there are Greenland sharks in what they call the St. Lawrence River and the St. Lawrence Estuary. Are you familiar with that?
No, I'm not.
All right. Mm-hmm. If you're in Lake Champlain, the very northern part of it goes into Canada, goes into the province of Quebec. There's a small area of it in Quebec.
Uh-huh.
At the very top of that portion of Lake Champlain is a river called the Richelieu River. This river goes north and connects with a much larger river called the St. Lawrence River.
Okay.
Now, this river, the St. Lawrence, goes eastward and comes out into a marine bay called the Gulf of St. Lawrence, over around Quebec and Nova Scotia. Now, there are Greenland sharks in that area of the Gulf of St. Lawrence. They swim into the entrance of the St. Lawrence River.
Okay.
But they only go so far. Once the water starts turning brackish and fresh water, they don't enter that part of it.
Okay.
But there's a, you know, right near where it connects to the ocean, there's a long part of the St. Lawrence River that is still salt water.
Gotcha.
So they do swim into the marine part of the river, but they don't seem to want to go any further once it starts changing over to fresh water.
Huh. Gotcha. Well, I guess that makes sense.
It's possible if they can tolerate the freshwater conditions, that one could conceivably swim all the way up the river, come down the Richelieu, and come into Lake Champlain.
Yeah.
Once in a blue moon.
Right.
Gotcha. Yeah. I'm looking up at a map of Lake Champlain right now, and yeah, I mean, it's all just so, I mean, that's
one problem for any animal that wants to come in from the St. Lawrence, go down the Richelieu, and come into Lake Champlain. There's a whole series of dams and canal systems on the Richelieu River that would be a problem for anything to get in and out. Mm-hmm. However, sometimes we have flooding. Like the Hurricane Irene in 2011 brought the water level up just ridiculously high, and it was a lot of flooding at Lake Champlain. Now, in a situation like that, it might be easier for some big marine animal to get over those obstructions if they're underwater.
Yeah. But of course, all the stories go back to before there were all the big dams and everything. So
exactly. Well, so one interesting thing that is extremely relevant to this whole idea is Lake Champlain itself was marine at one point.
Really?
Yes. Right after the end of the Ice Age, when all the ice melted, it caused all this flooding, and marine waters from the Gulf of St. Lawrence actually came into the Champlain Valley.
Okay.
And for a period of like 2,000 years, it was marine, and it was called the Champlain Sea.
Huh.
It was much bigger, and most of this sea was up in Ontario and Quebec, with only a small portion of it being down in Lake Champlain. However, fossil deposits from about 11,000 years old on both sides of Lake Champlain have produced seal bones, and they found a beluga whale skeleton in 1849 in Charlotte, Vermont, up on the side of a bluff. And the reason it was up on the side of a bluff is because 11,000 years ago, that was the shoreline. That's how much water level has come down.
Oh, my.
And since it was marine, so that bluff used to be the beach. That's how much higher the water was.
Wow.
So another interesting thing connected to that is that about 10,000 years ago, the land rose. And the reason the land rose is because it took time for the land to rebound from the weight of those melted glaciers.
Mm-hmm.
So you had like a period of like 2,000 years that it waited to come back up. Okay, when that came back up, it cut off the marine influence in Lake Champlain, and it slowly became fresh water.
Okay,
wow.
Okay.
Whatever was living in that sea either had to die or adapt to fresh water.
Yes.
Right.
There are like three or four fishes living in Lake Champlain now that are leftovers from that marine sea. You have freshwater adapted sea lampreys.
Wow.
You have a fish called the rainbow smelt, landlocked Atlantic salmon. These are all fishes that are left over from that time period. So the idea is there may be something else left that we haven't found yet that is what we call the monster.
Right. Wow.
That makes absolute perfect sense.
Yes.
Yeah.
And and animal life is very adaptive when it comes to that. I mean, here in Oklahoma, we bring in what we call striper, which are sea bass, and they put those into our fresh water lakes because they thrive. But they're from the ocean. They're a saltwater fish that can survive in the fresh water.
They're able to change their body chemistry.
Yes.
Live in fresh water.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Yes. I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, that's a big thing. And I never knew that's what they were until like probably the last 10 years I realized that's what they were. But it's a big deal because they run all year long. You can fish for these things year round here in the cold water, and they survive.
We have them here in Florida. They call them Goliath groupers.
Okay, yes, yeah.
It's a bass that gets 8 feet long, if you can imagine that.
Yes, yeah. I actually heard a story about somebody caught a big one down there. It was like 500 pounds or I don't know.
Something like They get huge.
But you can't keep, you know, obviously you can't keep them because they're endangered, right? They're an endangered species.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. So somebody caught one off a dock somewhere. And that stuff is fascinating. Are you, I have a question for you. Are you familiar with Randall Carlson at all?
No.
It's hard to peg him down, but what he is he studies the history of the Earth, and he puts a lot of different sciences sort of together. He combines things, and he started out as a sort of a geologist, his life work has been understanding like ice ages and meteor impacts and how that has shaped, you know, our modern society. And he talked about at the last ice age how deep that ice was up in that area. And
yeah, a mile thick.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that insane? I mean, that is incredible.
Well, it was so heavy, it actually sunk the continental plates down. And they're still rebounding. And that ties into what I was talking about, how land rose.
Right.
Put off the marine influence at Lake Champlain.
Yes.
Yeah, that's why they call it isostatic depression and isostatic rebound.
God dang.
Yeah.
That's some heavy ice, man.
Oh, and you know that the asteroid is what is believed to have wiped out the dinosaurs and marine reptiles 66 million years ago.
Yes.
There's a huge impact crater down in the Yucatan of Mexico.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But it's called Chicxulub.
Yes.
They believe that's what done in the dinosaurs and marine reptiles.
Right. Yeah. They found a mammoth from up in Minnesota. This is part of Randall's thing, is that he says that the ice age hit at such a rapid rate that one of the mammoths that they found, they found food that was undigested in the stomach, and it was frozen like deep frozen in a matter of minutes.
Permafrost, probably.
Permafrost, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So something happened, and it created a mass freeze quickly. And when it froze this mammoth, it was perfect. It was, you know, in perfect condition. Mm-hmm. So when they finally were able to get to it, they were able to study and research this thing as if it had just died, because it was frozen so quickly. That is something that I don't think people really understand, that, you know, that this kind of science and study is going on, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I study a lot of this stuff myself.
Right.
The glacial cycles and, you know, how this affects the potential of there being some kind of weird animal in Lake Champlain.
Right. Yeah.
It's the background history.
Right.
You know?
Right.
The most recent glaciation in North America was called the Wisconsin Glaciation.
Uh-huh.
And it lasted about 100,000 years. But there's a whole series of quote, ice ages going back 2 million years.
Right.
It froze and then melted and then refroze again.
Right.
During that period between the glaciations, you have what they call interglacials, where you had warm temperatures.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the problem with trying to understand the earlier glaciations is that the last glaciation destroyed a lot of the record of the previous glaciation. As these massive glaciers were moving south, they were plowing through, you know, the old fossil record of what was there before, and basically obliterated a lot of it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And how? Yeah. And are they getting that information from core ice tests that they do, where they go down and they drill
and sediment cores?
Okay,
and that's what they do, and they also, They have found the ancient shorelines of these old bodies of water, like the Champlain Sea.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Like all around Lake Champlain, there are these sand blowouts and bluffs. And that's the remains of the prehistoric shoreline. Now they're above the lake level because the water level was like 200 feet deeper than it is. Yeah.
So mainstream, what does mainstream science say about this? Do they take the idea of the Lake Champlain monster seriously, or is it something that they kind of just think is a bunch of woo-woo?
Well, you know, part of what's going on, I believe, is that it's become a taboo subject.
Mm-hmm.
One reason why, most people don't know this, but back in 1960, there was a ichthyologist at the British Museum of Natural History named Dennis Tucker that claimed to have seen the Loch Ness Monster in 1959 mm-hmm. and took a pro-Nessie stance and was fired from his job at the British Museum. I mean, this guy was a big to-do there, and even fought to try to get his job back.
Yeah.
And I had the old newspaper article about this. So it really is a taboo subject.
Right.
And part of the reason why the paleontology community has a real problem when you start suggesting that, oh, the plesiosaur isn't dead. It survived beyond its extinction, lives out in the deep ocean. And then about 10,000 years ago, some of them came into places like Loch Ness and Lake Champlain and got mm-hmm, trapped.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
There's a real sort of nervous...
Yeah.
Attached.
Right. And that's the problem, too, when you're talking about, you know, people they've made their name in, you know, paleontology or archaeology. Once they find something that they believe to be true, instead of being open-minded to maybe some other input as far as how things happened, or maybe they may not necessarily be correct in their dating or aging of things, they shun you, and they say, well, this person is a whack job. He's
If you go look at the history of scientifically unpopular ideas that were eventually proven to be right, you'll see the same phenomenon.
Mm-hmm.
Person's a quack, you know, they don't know what to talk about. Then eventually, they get enough evidence to back it up, and they say, okay, well, he was right.
Yeah.
Well, it's so like a perfect...
We're in a situation like that right now. We haven't got the evidence yet.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To prove this hypothesis that there's something there, but we're still working on it. It's a work in progress.
A perfect example is the coelacanth. I think they thought that science had proclaimed it dead for millennia or whatever, and then they found one off the coast in it was 1938 in off South Africa.
Yep.
Just pull it out of the ocean and bam,
it was a fish that was only known from fossils.
Yeah.
And the last fossils had dropped out of the fossil record 80 million years, and that's about 15 million years before the dinosaur and marine reptile extinctions. Then they find it alive in 1938, and they think, oh, there's only one population of them still alive off the Comoro Islands near South Africa.
Wow.
Then 1998, they find another group of them in Indonesia.
Wow.
So there's two species.
Yeah.
Well, I'm looking at them right now, and they are some prehistoric looking creatures, man.
For sure.
Hey, that's a nice t-shirt you got on there.
Oh, thanks, dude. It's brand new. Do you like that? It's one of the official What's Your Weird Story t-shirts.
Where'd you get that?
It's funny that you ask. I just got it off the brand new Spreadshirt.com site for the What's Your Weird Story podcast. There's no www. You just go straight to shop.spreadshirt.com/ what's without the apostrophe, WHATS hyphen YEO. /weird-story, and that'll take you right there.
I mean, you can never own enough clothing.
Well, that's true, Barry. There's t-shirts for the ladies, because, you know, they're cut differently. There's hoodies, which are really cool. There's two different kinds of hoodies, and there's also tote bags, so you can tote your stuff.
That's so cool, man.
So if you guys go out to spreadshirt.com, what's your weird story? Currently, there are two designs, but there will be more going up very soon. So just keep your eyes out for that. And if you decide to get one of their shirts, tag yourself on Instagram to ours or Facebook. Show your love. Show us what you got. Let's see your true colors. And the girl, the babysitter girl, she picked up the phone and there was a policeman on the other side. And he said, "We've tracked the phone call and it's coming from inside the house."
Whoa.
Yeah, dude.
I love those urban legend stories.
Dude, I do too. And you remember the one where the girl, it's always the babysitter or it's the kids making out in Lover's Lane, but there's the one where the girl comes up and she finds the kids are watching TV and she turns them around and their face has SpaghettiOs.
Oh, man. Or the hook guy. Remember the hook guy? Oh,
the hook. The hook was hanging from the rearview mirror.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you got a story that is similar to any of those awesome urban legends, we want to hear it. Because, you know, those urban legends, man, they started off as somebody's true life weird story. It's got to be true somewhere.
You guys fish?
Yes. Yes.
Barry, yeah, Barry, okay, more so well, than me.
A lot of the fish that thrive in North America that are well known to people here in North America, like the sturgeons,
yep.
The gars,
yep.
And boat. You know what a bowfin is?
No.
Well, they call them grinnels.
Okay.
And they call them blackfish.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
They're a really odd looking fish. Anyway, they're a common fish here in North America. Well, these fish, the gars and yep. The bowfins, they've been extinct in places like Africa, Europe, and Asia for about 40 million years. Wow. Yet they survive here in North America. So compared
right.
to what the fossil record is over in other countries, these fish that were common over here in North America are just as much of a living fossil as the coelacanth is.
Yeah, wow. That's yeah. That's I didn't think of that. That is fascinating. Yeah.
That's the truth.
Wow.
And yeah. Again, you know, the oceans, man, we know so very little about the biodiversity within those, you know, I mean, because we're so limited on the exploring and finding. So we're always finding new species.
They think that the really big things that we don't know about live in the midwaters.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they go all the way to the bottom and get video of the little things that live on the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
Down 6 miles deep,
right.
You know?
Right.
And then we know about the stuff that lives up at the surface. But the really weird stuff we don't know about probably lives in the mid-waters.
Yeah.
Right. The giant squid is a perfect example. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, they have specimens in museums, but very little in the way of film and video of a live one.
Yeah. Yeah.
Was one a few years ago swam into a bay in Japan and was
videotaped. Yep. I remember hearing about that.
There's a couple of underwater photographs of one coming up.
Yes.
It's one underwater camera, but that's it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, usually when they find them, they're dead.
Yeah. Or they're inside of a whale being digested and they just have the beaks or the whale's got the scars on them.
Yeah, the sperm whales eat them.
Yep.
That's insane. It's just insane. That's what makes this so interesting is that it is difficult to get the evidence because we don't have, I mean, you know more about this than I do, but, you know, like say for instance, the Japanese film that was made at, you know, what was their conclusion? I mean, did they think that there was something there? I mean, did they feel like that what they captured on the film was,
you know? Yeah, it's almost certainly Archithesis.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There's another big squid. Oh, what is it called? The Goliath squid, I think.
Okay.
If not, it's aptly named.
It's more aggressive than the giant squid, but they don't think it gets as long.
Uh-huh. Huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm looking at that right now. They're pretty big, but yeah, they aren't.
They think Archaeopteryx, the giant squid, gets about 40 feet long.
Right.
God, it's insane. Massive.
And this other one, I don't know. You know, when you, sometimes you're trying to think of something and the name won't come to you.
Yeah. All the time.
But there's another one that's almost as big, that's much more aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm looking at one right now. That is absolutely massive. That one could be photoshopped. I can't really tell.
They have,
but
they're suckers. They have teeth.
Uh huh.
And they have hooks on their clubs that if they grab a hold of you, you know, you're not getting away because you've got hooks and teeth.
Yeah.
Stuck in your flesh.
Right.
And then their mouth is like a giant parrot's beak.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other thing I was going to bring up too is because you live in Florida and the manatee, you know, is a pretty remarkable animal.
Yeah.
And that is, and when you look at that thing, you're looking at thousands of years or more of evolution. And
if you'll go to your computer and Google the term pezosiren, P-E-Z-O. S-I-R-E-N. This is the ancestor of all the manatees that lived in Jamaica about 50 million years ago, and it looks like a manatee with legs with feet.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
It looks very much very similar to like a hippo.
Yeah.
Which would make sense because,
an amphibious stage that they went through before they completely went fully aquatic.
Wow.
So yeah, they know the fossil record of these animals.
Yeah, well, and they just look so they're just a fascinating looking creature, you know.
Well, yeah.
If someone hadn't known that, like say a manatee was an actual thing that you can go look at, they wouldn't believe you. You know, it just looks so strange.
Well, actually, there are a lot of monster sightings here in Florida that I believe are misidentified manatees. There's several pieces of video that are claimed to be sea monsters that I think are just manatees.
Right.
Big humps in the water.
Yeah.
And that makes sense, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, back to the Champ, that definitely is not the same in description or in size or anything like that.
Actually, if you look at the sightings record of Champ, and the meager pieces of video and photographic evidence, what you come up with is something that looks like a plesiosaur, a long-necked marine animal from the age of the dinosaurs that's supposed to be extinct for 66 million years.
Right.
But the general theory is that they managed to survive out in the deep ocean, and that somehow a small group of them found their way to places like Lake Champlain and Loch Ness, where they were connected to the sea, came in and got trapped. That's the most sensible answer.
Sure. Now, do you have, in your possession, do you have other video footage of people that have had sightings up in Champlain, or?
Well, I have copies of what has been out there. If you want to see it, I can tell you how to get to it.
Okay.
All right. First thing you probably want to look at is the famous Sandor Mounsey photograph. So if you'll go to Google and punch up Sandra, M-A-N-S-I photograph, it should take you right to it.
Okay.
What you're going to see was a photograph taken in 1977 at Lake Champlain that looks sort of like a plesiosaur with its head and neck up out of the water and a humpback looking back over its back.
Okay. Let me see here.
Yep, I think I just, that's the one I pulled up.
That's probably the most famous image that's claimed to be a Champ.
Okay, yeah, I see that.
Yeah. Then there's a video, you'll go to YouTube and do a search under Lake Champlain Monster on ABC News. That will take you to the Peter Vaudette video from 2005.
Okay.
And there's a section of the video where you see them filming off the side of a boat up a boat rail, and you'll see what appears to be some kind of long neck and a head moving up and down, right off the side of the boat, just under the water.
Uh-huh.
And then it turns to the left, and you'll see a flipper-like object come out from the other side of it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And the other really good piece of video was a video shot in May of 2009 called the Olson video by a guy named Eric Olson. And the easiest way to find that on YouTube is to punch up strange sighting on Lake Champlain, May 2009. To me, those are the three most impressive pieces of photographic evidence for the Lake Champlain monster.
We will make sure to put some links up and some stuff in our social media on the Twitter and the Facebook and Instagram and all that. We'll make sure to put those links up and on the webpage for everybody to check out, because that's some really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I'm looking at the video right now. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Interesting. That is fascinating. Yep.
That's as good as it gets.
Yeah.
And one other interesting thing that I happened to have been involved with was 2017, and this is in the Small Town Monsters documentary.
Uh-huh.
We got a sonar hit on our sonar unit, and it's shaped like a plesiosaur.
Ooh.
Big body with a long, smaller, thinner neck appendage coming off of it. We estimated it was probably about 12, 13 feet long. Swam right underneath our boat.
Wow.
This is July 4th, 2017.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah, so if you watch the documentary, you'll see it in there.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
So we know about, everybody knows about Nessie, the most famous lake monster. And Champ is probably, I would say Champ is probably the second or third most. He's definitely the most as far as American. But what do you know about, and I'm sure you know because, you know, this is what you do, but what can you tell us about like Ogopogo and some of the other monsters, lake monsters?
The Ogopogo is up in British Columbia.
Mm-hmm.
In Okanagan Lake. I think it's like 80 feet long, 80 miles long. The lake, something like, I don't know, 300 feet deep. And the reports of the Ogopogo seem to be describing a somewhat different creature, a more serpentine creature, which seems to match up with a sea monster not far away off the coast of Vancouver that they call Cadborosaurus. And seems to have sort of a moose camel horse looking head with flippers, front flippers, elongated body, and maybe tail, well, like tail flukes. And the closest thing in the fossil record that we can find to match up to it is a prehistoric whale called Bacillosaurus. If you'll Google Bacillosaurus, you'll see what I'm talking about.
Okay.
Okay.
It essentially looked like a giant eel with the head of a crocodile with a normal whale-looking tail and regular front flippers. This was a prehistoric type of whale that lived 40 million years ago.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, wow.
So some people think that's what the Ogopogo and Cadborosaurus.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that the Cadborosaurus at some point in time swam up the Columbia River, and a population of them got trapped in Lake Okanagan.
Okay.
But that's just a provisional theory.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, that you know, when you're looking at, like, the sturgeon and animal, that's a creature that's also hundreds of thousands of years old.
Some people think that's what these monsters really are, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
That's I was going to say that.
Yeah. We have a population of lake sturgeons in Lake Champlain that can get up to 8 feet long.
Uh-huh.
And then in the St. Lawrence River, you have bigger ocean-going sturgeons that come into fresh water to spawn, called the Atlantic sturgeons. They can get about 14 feet long.
Wow.
If you had one of those that occasionally got in and out of Lake Champlain, that would certainly be responsible for a lot of monster sightings.
Sure.
So, you know, the jury's still out. We don't really have a handle on what is really going on here.
Right.
So, you know, all these different theories are just provisional theories.
Right.
Until we find some kind of confirmation.
Sure. You probably have the biggest handle, I would imagine, on what's going on than anybody. I mean, I think you sounds like you've put a lot of time, effort, and money into it. And
absolutely. Yeah. I'm going back in August.
Okay.
I'm supposed to go for 6 weeks in August into the middle part of September. So
now when you go up there, are you out there on a daily basis, you know, how do you do that? Are you on a boat? Are you from the shoreline or?
Usually in a boat.
Okay.
Because that's where they are. They're under the water, in the deep water.
Okay.
That's the only sensible place they've got to hide.
Uh-huh.
To be this elusive.
Sure.
So I'm doing my best I can with it on the cameras. Sometimes the water visibility is terrible.
Yeah.
It just depends what the water chemistry and pH is, you know?
Sure.
We had underwater cameras down in 2017, but the water clarity was terrible, and we got nothing usable on the underwater cameras. Best luck we had was with the hydrophones and with the sonar.
And do you have a group that you go out with?
No.
Okay, you did.
I had a partner, research partner, that had the boat and the underwater sonar, but he died of cancer last year.
Okay.
Oh, sorry to hear that.
I'm kind of having a reboot, but the only time I worked with groups usually is when I'm up there with a documentary crew.
Okay.
And then there was a group I worked with back in 2013 and 2014 called Champ Camp, but they're defunct now, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, do you have a website or anything that you have set up that?
Well, I have three Facebook things. I have a group called Lake Champlain Monster Research by Scott Martis and William Jurgenis is one Facebook group.
Okay.
Then for bigger, you know, all sea monsters and all that stuff, I've got another group called the Zombie Plesiosaur Society.
And that's where we met. That's where I was part of that group. And I posted
Steve
up.
You went to the group. Steve Carrington brought you in, and that's where we met. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then there's a page called Lake Champlain Mystery Animals that I started back in 2011. So that's the three main things I got going.
Okay. Cool.
He's written a book. Yeah, I was getting ready to mention that.
It's on Amazon. It's only in digital form. It's called Night of the Living Dead Plesiosaurs.
Love it.
Nice.
And it's really cheap. It's $7.
Okay.
I mean, can't go wrong.
That's fantastic.
Yeah. We'll make sure to have some images and links for that as well.
Thank you.
No problem. So you are in the camp of the plesiosaur for Champ.
That's what you're. Yes,
until
a better answer comes along.
Right.
if you look at the eyewitness sketches that people make, that's what they usually look like.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it seems like, you know, there is the two schools, or for at least two versions for when it comes to lake monsters and sea monsters. I guess three if you want to include the giant squids, but it's either the plesiosaur type or the serpentine kind of type, you know. Do you know of any other variations? I guess, you know, that would be that you're aware of, or any other lesser known?
There are generally, there was a book written in 1968. Guy spent 10 years researching it, called In the Wake of the Sea Serpents, by one of the founders of the field of cryptozoology named Bernard Heuvelmans. I don't know if you've heard the name or not. Anyway, in his book, at the end of it, he went through all, he spent 10 years going through all these sea serpent sightings. He came up with 9 different types.
Oh, really?
Of sea monster. Now, there's been a lot of debate about how valid the categories that he came up with are, but there's, he came up with 9 different types, which would include the long neck types, the serpentine types. One he thought was a giant turtle of some sort.
Yep.
That makes sense.
He's got some kind of a crocodilian, mosasaurish looking monster.
Okay.
That he calls the sea saurian.
Okay.
And then there are several, you know, long neck types and serpentine types. One type he thought was probably a giant eel of some sort.
Again, yeah. those make sense because we have those animals still existing. And we know that. I mean,
the conger eel off the European conger eel could get 10 feet long. Big around as a telephone pole. It's a scary animal.
Yeah.
So if you just up that a few feet, you'd have a pretty good Loch Ness monster right there.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's wow. That's,
and also, I mean, we have, you know, stuff like boa constrictors, anacondas, you know, those things get huge as well. Now, granted, we don't have them
in
normally.
They're in Florida?
Yeah. They're breeding in the wild.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's scary.
have you ever seen these European catfish that can get 8 feet long? The whale's cat?
Yeah, I've seen the, the one that they caught off of, what do they call that? That's the devil fish or something like that in India. I don't know if it's catfish or not, but the thing looks like freaking something out of prehistoric age for sure.
Yeah, I mean, there are some really scary looking and giant freshwater fish that most people don't know about.
Yeah.
Oh, well, we know, like, now one of the legends that we kind of grew up with is like the giant man-eating, or at least man-attacking catfish.
Oh, in, yeah.
Lake Texoma.
All over the place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But well, usually around a dam.
Yes.
Down to a dam, that's and right. They saw a giant catfish as big as a Volkswagen. Yeah, those stories are all over the place.
Yeah. We Lake Texoma is where my family has a place down there, and we go... We're down there fishing all the time, and my dad and I, coming back from a fishing trip, we noticed something flopping on the surface, and it turned out to be a big blue cat that had surfaced too quickly, and its intestines had come out of its body. So fish can have the same sort of like the bends or something like that, where if they surface too quickly, that happens. And we pulled it right out of the water. It was dying anyway, and it was like, it was 55 pounds, dude. And it's,
well, once in North America, huge. Get 5 feet long.
Yeah. And I mean, a couple of hundred pounds. I mean, this one that we caught was only 55 pounds, but its head was as big as mine. I mean, it was massive.
There are ones in like Champlain with heads the size of a basketball.
That's incredible.
I've seen those.
Yeah.
So,
well, I remember, probably about 25 years ago, I guess, whenever one of our friends pulled a catfish line stuck out down in just one of the creeks. I think it was Brown, Barry. And they one day went down there and they checked on it and they pulled out, and it was probably at least 3 foot long catfish that was, you know, as big around as, you know, like a a watermelon or a football or something. It was huge.
You know about alligator gars?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we have those here. We have those here.
They get huge.
Oh, and they're scary. They are scary.
Yeah, they are.
I've got friends that go noodling, you know, bare hand fishing. I had a friend who told me that he stuck his hand into a hole, into a nest. And he kept going into this nest and found out that he actually had his arm all the way into a fish, the mouth, and luckily pulled it out. And ended up, I mean, the thing could have been, you know, 100 something pounds. It was a big mama. And they,
what I'd be worried about noodling would be an alligator snapper turtle.
No kidding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those things that's are one of the mean. Things. Yeah.
Bite a finger off.
They are mean, man, and they get big, and they are ferocious when they get angry. They don't mess around. I had one a couple of years ago that I had to mess with a little bit, and I never heard a turtle make the sound that I heard that thing make, dude. It scared the hell out of me, man.
I remember one time riding my bike and down about probably 2-3 blocks from Kingfisher Creek in our hometown. And it was late at night, and I saw something moving across the road in the neighborhood. And I thought, oh, well, that looks like it's too low to the ground to be a dog, and it's not, and it's wider than a cat. So I thought, oh, that must be a raccoon. And I go up by it, and it's one of those alligator snapping turtles.
Yeah.
And it was huge. Yeah. And it was just in the middle of the road at night in the summer.
Well, that's how they get from one body of water to another one. Like,
Yeah. But we have those alligator gars, and we've got those things. I mean, If people have never seen an alligator gar, go Google that, because it is a prehistoric looking creature that has a pretty gnarly mouth of teeth on it.
Oh yeah,
let me tell you, they are prehistoric.
Yeah.
Dinosaurs and marine reptiles are eating them things. Right. 100 million years ago.
Right, it's incredible.
Yeah,
that's incredible.
And also though, down there in Florida, you've got the giant alligators. I mean, we keep seeing these photos and pictures of videos of alligators. Place
to find an alligator and get his picture on a golf course.
Yeah.
Right.
Really, that's what you see them at. Right.
Yeah. I was getting ready to say that. They always go to golf courses.
All the pictures I've got of alligators I took on a golf course.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And they're massive. They're huge. Yeah. And, they're living dinosaurs.
Yeah.
For the most, I mean, that's just what they are, and turtles, turtles go back to the dinosaur ages too. Absolutely. So again, it's not unfeasible by any means. There's some kind of large or several kinds of large unknown aquatic organisms that are.
I've been doing at Lake Champlain is I've been looking for remains of dead ones in caves. There are a couple of caves that are above ground now.
Okay.
That were underwater during the Champlain Sea period I've been investigating.
Okay.
That's a good idea.
Now I'm trying to find caves that may still be underwater.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Have you found anything interesting in that area of exploration for yourself?
Not yet.
Okay. Okay.
I'm still looking.
Sure.
Now, do you scuba dive? Is that part of your, are you just above the surface?
Frankly, I can't afford it.
Right. Right.
I do swim under the water and investigate things, but I just really can't. My whole operation is running on fumes. I've got a GoFundMe thing that I'm taking donations for.
Okay, good. Yeah.
So we'll make sure to get all that information.
That would be a lot of help. It's
absolutely.
Lake Champlain Monster Hunt on GoFundMe.
Great. Yeah, and we'll definitely put that up there.
Perfect.
Because I need some help. I've got 3 months to get more money. Together, so
of course, and it's important.
Was supposed to work with us last summer, but he got sick. So
sure,
yeah.
Well, it's important to for people to support things like this, because if we allow these things to go unresearched, then those things will never be totally brought to the surface. And I mean, I think that area of study is incredibly important for us to understand the human story, to know where
if there's
we fit
not a monster there, what are people seeing and what's going on here?
Yeah.
If it's not biological, it's sociological and psychological.
Yes.
There's something going on.
Yes.
That we haven't got a handle on yet. Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, hey, anything else you want to cover?
That's about all I can think of, and it's been an interesting conversation, and thank you for having me on.
I can't tell you how excited I am that we got to speak to you, because this is an area that we don't get a whole lot of folks that, and obviously people that do research, and that is, it's just an amazing thing, and we appreciate you taking your time, for sure.
Thank you for having me on, and if you get a chance, by all means, check out the Small Town Monsters on the Trail of Champs series, because I'm in it.
Will do.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks. Thank you once again. We can't express how honored and thrilled we are. We've been going back and forth all week talking about how excited we are to talk to you. So,
and feel free to come back anytime.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Just let me know when.
Okay.
Yeah. You just get a hold of us. We're open. So
right. I'll do that.
All right. Well, take care.
Yeah. You too, man.
All right.
Thanks.
Bye.
Thank you.
Yep.
Hey Barry,
yeah.
Have you ever seen a goat sucker?
What?
Goat sucker, chupacabra.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever seen one of those?
I haven't seen one personally, but I've heard about them.
Yeah, me too. If anybody's got a goat sucking story, wait. If you got a goat sucker story, we want to hear it. If you got a Bigfoot story, we want to hear it. If you got a Loch Ness monster story, or a Lake Champlain story, or Ogopogo story, or an Oingo Boingo story, wait. That was an '80s band. Anyway, you got a weird cryptid story, we want to hear it.
I didn't even know what a cryptid was, man.
Yeah, dude. Cryptids. They're like the animals that haven't been necessarily proven by science. They're the ones on the edge. You know, they're not necessarily known animals, but they're known animals. We don't have the bodies or anything like that. So they're kind of like half myth, half story, based in reality, but still in that weird mystery area that we don't know about yet. Cryptids are fun.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow. I mean,
yeah.
Amazing. Incredible. I can't believe that we were able to talk to someone in the field of research that he's involved in. And that story, I love this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by this stuff. I love history. I loved, you know, paleontology, archaeology. Mm-hmm. I love geology. And he kind of has a foot in all of those worlds.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I think we could tell. I could tell that you were keen. You took the lead in this one, as far as questions. Because I was just like, wow. And you were just there with good questions, great questions. And you guys had a great conversation that I was just happy to be sitting there enjoying, as well as the listeners, hopefully. So, you know, again, we want to thank Scott for joining us, because, you know, that was just fantastic. It was great. And we just had a great conversation.
Yeah.
And, you know, hopefully we can hear more after, you know, he goes and discovers Champ for real in later on this year.
Yeah.
So if you guys can go to the GoFundMe that he dropped, and we'll have the link for that and on the webpage and the Facebook page, social media, all that good stuff. We'll have all that. Go buy his book, Night of the Living Dead Plesiosaur. It's cool. It's a digital, you know, get it for your Kindle or whatever you read your digital books on, your phone, wherever you read it. And, you know, that's a good price. It's like $7-$8, he said.
Yeah.
It's a good price, you know, and it's obviously he knows what he's talking about and researched, you know, just hearing him talk. So
absolutely.
I'll have to go and get one myself. We are just, I don't know, I guess I'm still floored about how good of us, you know, a great of an interview that we scored for our show.
Yeah, we were fortunate. And he got in touch with you through a Facebook page. Is that correct? And I mean, I want to say that if anyone out there knows any researchers, or maybe someone is listening to the podcast that's a researcher, please get in touch with us. We'd love in any field, you know, if it's, you know, alien research or Bigfoot or, you know, any of the things that we discuss on the podcast,
even the stuff we haven't touched, you know, maybe you got some cool stuff, you know, quantum physics is weird, man.
You
got some of that stuff. Bring it. We'll talk.
Drop that.
You know, we want to hear it, you know, educate
us. Absolutely.
You know, and, you know, but hey, even if your research is limited to just your own personal experience and listening to the podcasts, you know, if you got a weird story, you got a good story, you got any kind of story, you know, you want to share it, let us know, contact us, you know, we'll find a place for it on the podcast. and we'll figure something out to do, because we just love talking to you guys. We love hearing stories, hearing people's stories. You know, it's just, it's so good to communicate with people and to, you know, have that sense of community and friendship, and, you know, just that the back and forth of the conversation and just everything. And it's, you know, it's hard for me to explain when I'm talking to people who haven't listened to the show just how relaxed and easygoing our format is, you know, because if we're not that kind of straight up interview show, we want to talk to you. We don't want you to talk at us and talk to at our listeners. You know, we want you to, all everybody to be involved. And I think that's just, I think that's how we grew up. You know, I think that's just how our nature is. And maybe that's a small town. Maybe it's just because we've been friends all our lives and we've always had, you know, family hanging out discussions or whatever. But it's good.
It's a sense of respect, too. You know, you know, everyone has a voice and everyone has an opinion and an experience. And we want to let those people voice those. And I think we have fun with it in a way where it sort of leaves the door open to, you know, an interview to go a bunch of different ways and a talk, as it were.
Yeah.
And that's what's fun about it. I mean, we're just having a conversation and, you know, we're lucky enough that we've had just some great people on, and they've have added such a great color to what we do. If without the guests, you and I are just sort of sitting here spinning our wheels, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you know, we'll talk, but we know each other's stories, you know, well, not all of them, but we know a good chunk of them. Right. So, but you know, it's always great to talk to you guys. We want to hear more of your stories. So get a hold of us on our Facebook or the Instagram or the Twitter or on the hotline, you know, get a hold of us and we'll, let's talk, let's share stories and let's make podcasting history. I don't know about we're making history, but you know, let's connect. Let's do it. Let's have fun. Also, be safe.
Be weird.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.